Mates, that was stupid.
Is that how we open up a Cheerio? Are we going to be the token American?
I know. And all of our UK listeners are laughing at me, but that's what I'm here for. No, wait. I am here with Roberto to talk season 4 of House of Cards. It's back.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've talked about this show, and I don't know how I feel about it, but I'm glad that we're back talking about this show, if nothing more than to talk about this show together.
Yes. It's my excuse to call you and bother you to talk to me. So,
well, because season 3, you know, and I think we talked about this at the last time we talked, but season 3 was so weirdly lackluster that on the side of things, I wasn't necessarily looking forward to season 4 for House of Cards, because it's just season 3... Like, and it was funny. There's a really good article out there. I forgot who wrote it, but like season 1, I guess it's maybe we're spoiled, because season 2 opened up with such a bang, and season 3 ended with such a whimper that it's like, you know, unless, because again, we season 2 opened up with, you know, someone got iced, and maybe that's what needs to happen, is just someone needs to die every season to kick it off in the right way.
I absolutely agree. I really had big hopes for the opener.
Because there's like certain good moments of season 3 that I loved. Like, you know, like when Doug, you know, again, cuts off his past in the best way possible. It's like, that's awesome. That's the way to end it. Like, that should have been that. But now we're like in a weird, like, well, Claire and Frank are getting a divorce of some sort, because that's what couples do, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird.
I know. I mean, we don't want to hear about your boring divorce. You know, everybody gets divorced.
Well, I'm just saying it's a very strange way to kick off, you know, your 4 seasons, especially for a show that, you know, I mean, what the British series, the British one only went, what, like 3 series, 4 series, something like that?
Yeah, 4, about 4. Yes.
About 4 series. So, though we don't know for, you know, and again, for those who are new to the show, we go episode by episode. I tend to watch episode by episode. Jackie may be the one that binges it sometimes.
All the time.
But to kind of clarify, because of that, I don't know if this is the last season. I have they announced that they're doing a season 5 yet? Because by about this time frame.
Yes, they are. They are. They've got a new showrunner. I forgot who it is, and I should have had that ready for this. But there is somebody, but it's not going to be Bo Williams, who's been doing them and was the creator of the UK show. I think he was the creator of the original. I need to stop right now, because I'm going to sound like an idiot. You've got to forgive me, guys. It's been a couple months vacation from House of Cards.
No, it's fine, because ultimately, you know, and this is sort of the thing, and maybe and this has nothing to do with the show, but like by about this time, because there's been many times where there's certain shows that have been great for adapting to American audience, like House of Cards is a perfect fit, because it's, you know, you can, politics is sort of the same everywhere, and you can kind of adapt politics accordingly. And there's some shows that just didn't do so well versus their British counterparts, like Life on Mars, when it came stateside and sort of got converted, didn't do so hot. Or, you know, but then you have things like The Office that did phenomenal when they finally, once they finally figured out their footing and what made them a unique show, to that. I just hope, my only hope is that, and fear really, is that this doesn't become like The West Wing, where it's sort of this weird thing. I guess there's certain things I like about House of Cards, and there's certain things I don't like about House of Cards. And so far, at least with episode 1, and we'll get talking about the actual episode soon, it started to do things I don't quite like about House of Cards, but, you know.
Yeah. Life on Mars didn't do well. Well,
No, the U.S. version did not. The U.S. version, I think, ended like a season. I mean, that's the
comedy movie, right?
No, Life on Mars is the one with, I think it ended up having Harvey Keitel on the U.S. side of things.
Okay,
which,
never mind.
Which would have been that,
which is why I don't know what it is.
So. No, it's fine. It didn't do so hot stateside. It was an amazing British show, and I think its big problem, And this is sort of the problem that happens with a lot of conversions to the U.S. audience, is that unless they have a plan as to, you know, because there's some things that make things uniquely British, and there's certain things that make things uniquely American.
Mm-hmm.
And you can take, like we'll take The Office as an example, because The Office is a great one. Like, the first couple episodes, the first season was very much, you know, part for part, you know, of the British show, almost like word for word. And then when it became its own thing and started making what made, you know, what made American office life versus British office life different. I'm not saying that there's not similarities, but there's certain differences that make it funnier. Once they did that and they embraced sort of the American, it became a very cool show. And you know, everyone, I mean, look whose careers have, you know, have completely exploded because of that. And so with Life on Mars, I just didn't do that. But versus House of Cards, where like House of Cards in the British one is very, very British, has a thing like that. Whereas because of the nature of American politics, you can't really, you know, you can't really force British politics in an American audience. You have to make it American.
Absolutely.
It you know, this is why we see certain things like primaries becoming a big deal, you know, much like we're seeing now in terms of our own policy.
Yeah, actually, our own political drama that's playing out with the presidential election is would probably have higher ratings than House of Cards right now.
And that's the point, is that House of Cards on the U.S. side is always...
Unfortunately,
but in a good way, as always, it always is, because most of the time, you know, whether we like it or not, politics really doesn't change.
Yeah.
But typically, House of Cards always seems to mirror what is happening in the American political scene. Not because it's copying or doing anything that, it's because a lot of things don't really change. Mm-hmm. You know, we have certain sides that do certain things, and ultimately politics boils down to a giant mishmash of compromise and figuring out how to do that. And right now, since we're at our phase of everybody starting to get office, it's the same kind of thing on House of Cards, which I think that makes it its strength. That's always the strength of the show, is that it's sort of real politics for both good and for bad.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the drama. So I've always felt like the drama wasn't as strong as it has been. Especially this so far. And again, who knows? We have no idea what will happen beyond episode 2 for me. But so far.
Yeah, I guess we should say I have watched the entire season. I held off. You would be proud of me. I tried. And I wasn't going to watch it. But, you know, I do booking for Court Killers, and
right,
they ran through it very quickly. So I actually waited. I kept up with them instead of watching it all in 2 days. It took me about 2 weeks. So
that's fair. I mean, again, for me, it's more.
I wish I could stuck with it. I regret doing that now, but go ahead.
It's okay. I mean, ultimately, for me, it's right. I feel the strength is that. Well, you know what? Let's stop talking about the episode. Let's actually jump into the episode.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we've got some new characters this time. We've got Conway, who is the Republican candidate, and I'll get his first name in a minute. But then also we've got Elizabeth Hale, who's Clara's mother. We haven't seen her before. And we've got, Cecil Jones and Doris Jones, who's running for Congress. I don't think that they are going to be major players. I think that that's kind of sort of clear. But also we've got Leanne Harvey, who's hired as Claire's sort of a campaign manager, I suppose. But, you know, right-hand henchwoman type thing. She's her Douglas Stamper.
Who's that plays Claire's mother again? And
I forgot her name, and I meant to write that down.
Let me look it up, because...
Yes, she's everywhere, and I knew her name, but I don't. She's an actress whose name I haven't picked up on, but...
I mean, let me double check, because...
She's been in a million things.
I have to... It's Elizabeth... what's her full name again?
Hale.
Okay, so let me look up, because I'm... I got to look it up here in the full cast, because she, like, I want to know who she is, because I think that may be my new favorite character.
Oh, good. Yeah. I like it too. And as you're looking that up, and this episode is kind of, it's really, there's parallels about trust between Seth and Frank and Stamper, Frank and Stamper as a group. They're kind of questioning Seth. And then, of course, Leanne with Claire, kind of developing their relationship, and then with and then with Elizabeth and Claire, that they're kind of mending their relationship here, or I don't know if they quite do that at all, but that they definitely have the typical mother-daughter relationship where the daughter goes off and doesn't call.
Well, this is what I like about it, and the actress is Ellen Burstyn.
Burstyn, that's right.
She's been in, and now I recognize where I see her from. She's actually was in Interstellar. I think she was the older version of the daughter or something like that, and she's also in Requiem for a Dream. I guess she was the mother in Requiem. Was she the mother in Requiem?
Really? Wow.
I want to make sure, because Interstellar, she was older Murph. And just because I saw Requiem, I want to know who she was in Requiem for a Dream, because that's like one of my all-time favorite movies. And I want to make sure, because she's known for that. So let me see who Sarah Goldfarb is. Yeah, this is it. Yeah, she's the mother in Requiem for a Dream. Sarah Goldfarb, you know, the one that was, you know, addicted to you know,
the
drugs and whatnot.
Diet pills or something.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Juice by, you know, that whole thing. Wow. Yeah, no, she is by far, so far, my favorite character. Now, only because the one thing we've never so far done in the show, because a lot of Claire's analysis has always been through the eyes of Frank and through that kind of relationship. And I like to see Claire, like, the minute, and I realize I'm jumping ahead a bit, but the minute, you know, it's revealed that she has cancer or you know, some type of, you know, she's going through all this stuff, like, the demeanor of Claire completely, utterly shifts. And I really kind of dug seeing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I think in this episode, okay, well, yeah, let's focus on Claire first. I was going to mention Goodwin because he comes in first and he's not really much to him, but so there's this issue with her mother. She obviously hasn't talked to her mother since, I guess, her father's funeral, and you can tell her mother wants to be in Claire's life, but she's very resentful. She's very hurt that Claire hasn't talked to her, you can see it when Claire shows up. Elizabeth is all dressed, ready to meet her, but doesn't come to the door. And then that evening, she goes to kill a lizard, and Claire almost runs into her, but Claire isn't quite ready to see her either. And it's funny that they both want to see each other, but they don't, you know, they don't want to be the first one to make that happen. And so I think it's great how they've developed her character to be very similar to Claire, or Claire is a lot like her mother, I should say. And then there's that scene where they finally meet in the dining room, and they're going down, you know, Elizabeth says we should uncover this furniture, and she says, don't do it for me. But she criticized Claire and says, why didn't you come see me? You know, you take 2 days to say hello, when it was really Elizabeth who started it off by hiding away in her room.
Well, I think it's very appropriate, because ultimately, like, I hate to say it, but Claire is not there for her mother. And I think that's what I like about the episode arc itself. And when we come to at the end, when it's revealed, you know, what is going on with her mother. You know, the whole, you know, she literally, she you know, because she comes out very dressed, very, you know, well-looking. And then at the end, she, you know, you see her literally putting on the wig over, you know, essentially the you know, chemo wig, kind of speak. And it's, you know, it's completely a complete shift. But what I like about that is that Claire originally wasn't there for her mother. She was there to do what Claire does.
Yeah.
You know, try to figure out how she can be just as powerful as her husband, or now soon-to-be ex-husband. Which is kind of why why I like that interaction at the end, because we always see kind of Claire doing the exact same thing throughout the whole series. We don't see her kind of grow or change or reveal a little bit of humanity to herself. You know, we always see her doing the same thing. Well, she either A, is in the shadow of Frank, or B, she steps up and does her own thing. And that's kind of where this episode went. And I was kind of like, oh man, we're doing this again. Like, not in a bad way, just like in a, cool, we're doing the exact same thing again. It's like the water thing. It's like, you know, the ambassadorship. It's like everything else we've done with Claire. And it's like, because she literally, it was so funny seeing her kind of come in. It's like, I want to run for office in the city. It's like, you never live in the city.
Yeah.
And it's just it was so funny seeing her, like, not quite understand why she couldn't do it.
Right.
Get completely slammed by the local politicians. It's like, why are you trying this?
Yeah, it was very, she's really sort of full of herself that she thinks she can just waltz in that district and, you know, and as apparently it's made up of constituents that wouldn't really like, as Leanne called her, Lily White. She doesn't really represent that community.
Not at all. And I think that's also very telling because it's, you know, she comes back home not to necessarily come back home and like, 'cause I had originally thought she was going back to her mother to kind of collect herself, talk to her mother, figure out
Sure.
who she is as a person. But no, she comes back home to do exactly the same thing because, well, I can't do it in Washington. Maybe I can go back home and do it here. And it's just
Right,
like, it doesn't work that way.
and she's also establishing residency because that's very important. She can't run for that district if she doesn't actually live there. So she's establishing that this is her house, that mansion is in her name. And so, you know, she's saying, well, yes, maybe I live in DC, but you know, so she's that's totally what it is. That's why she didn't stay at a hotel.
Right, and that's what bug I think that's what bugged me about why I like that last bit of interaction of like, because all of this was political, and then the minute it's revealed, everything shifts. And to me, I know she'll still run because that's what Claire does. She just try, and again, not to any fault of her own. It's just she ultimately, I don't like. I think Claire. This is where I think the character of Claire is going. I think she is trying to accept, or she can't accept that this might just be it for her, and that there really isn't a way up. Which is, I think, maybe that's the overarching theme of House of Cards. Is that this is as high as it goes for some people. Like, you know, we have like with Frank, like, again, there's no higher office than the president. And that's about it. There's nothing left to excel to.
Sorry.
No.
You just made me think of a question that can kind of like wrap up the Claire topic. So Stamper and Frank come in and tell her, expose that her mother has cancer, which she didn't know, and then tells her that she needs to go out there and say that the reason she's here is for her mother, not because she's campaigning, not because she's leaving him, and explain that to the press. She didn't have to do that. And coming off of the very last episode, which in the timeline of the show takes place the very next day. She was supposed to get on the plane and go to New Hampshire with Frank, and she said no, she left. And the very next day, you know, or two, I suppose, by the time Frank shows up, she's ready to just cave and do what Frank wants. Like, does that make any sense to you? That's one of the things about this episode that I thought, oh, what kind of season is this going to be?
Well, ultimately for me, it made sense because she gives Frank the ultimatum of like, let me do this or I won't do this. Because that's always been her thing, is that she ultimately, because like, because I mean, as much as Frank is kind of dealing with it and angry and everything else, Frank still, I think, cares about her, you know, in his weird, effed up way. You know, he still has feelings for her. It's not, you know, it does just end. But Claire ultimately wants more than just to be the first lady, than just to be the wife of Frank Underwood. And she's always wanted more than that, to both her detriment and to her success. And so I think, you know, having that moment of like, you know, you're not here to campaign, you know, you're here for, they say that. It's like, so long as you don't get in my way when I do, you know, because they makes that ultimatum of like, you have to let this happen. And so I think that it's not her so much as compromising per se, as more of, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do, you know, basically, because again, the whole deal was they'll break it off after the presidency, after the election, after all that's said and done, and, you know, figure it out. Because they don't want that to get out, you know, because, you know, if she's the divorced wife of the first of the president, it doesn't help her achieve her goal, and vice versa, you know?
Gotcha. Yeah, I agree. I agree. Let's very quickly talk about Lucas and then go to our
Yeah, let's go
sponsors.
back to Lucas and
So,
let me
did
tell
you
you.
even remember him when he popped in the screen?
Oh
How
no,
long did it take for you to remember his name? It's been.
if there is ever, well, the funny thing is, I didn't remember it until you told me, and I remembered it exactly. If there's ever a way to reintroduce a character in a scene, it is him, you know, describing a pornographic scene for his cellmate.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do to keep yourself safe in there.
And it was amazing. It was like, that is a perfect, like I was like, oh, it's this guy again. Well, what's he do? Oh, damn. Okay, so it's going to be that kind of episode. And I was kind of looking forward to that beeline. Like, out of all the things this episode, I think that might have been one of my favorite beelines for sure, was the idea of Lucas in prison. And I kind of wish we'd saw more of it. Maybe that's what bummed me out. I kind of want to see Lucas more in prison and have to, like, deal with all this stuff. Because we come back to him, and it's like, well, he doesn't look beat up or haggard or anything like that. He just looks like, you know, like he has before. Like, he doesn't look any more ragged than normal.
Yeah, we've got all these beeline characters that are trying to fight the power, fight Frank, and you know, and so I kind of at this point I'm wondering what is his name? What is his name? Because we didn't see him all last season, and then I'm thinking, oh, well, what about Gavin? Is he going to team up with Gavin? Are all these people going to kind of come together to fight Frank? You know,
I kind of hope no. Okay. I mean, obviously, you know, the show's title lends itself to having that, you know, concept. Mm-hmm. You know, it all comes crashing down like a house of cards, you know, that kind of metaphor.
Oh, yeah.
I hope not, because there's the one thing I wished. I mean, and again, that's Lucas's character. It's sort of, you know, the one thing I was happy for him going to prison in a weird way was that he just had to let things go. And not because Frank was too powerful. I mean, yes, I'd love nothing more than Lucas to avenge, you know, all that went wrong and everything else in between. But I've learned a couple of things from last season, and there's something good about letting go of things.
Mm-hmm.
And not, you know, and versus not letting go. Because we see what happens when you don't let go, you know, in last season. We saw with Doug, for example, Doug Stamper, the only way that he could get rid of his past, so to speak, was literally killing it off. But he could not let it go. And it literally brought him down to, you know, the darkest part of this character. Like, we saw him at his worst again. So I'm definitely excited to have Lucas back in the game, and I'm definitely excited to have him back as a character, I know he's going to go down that path because he just can't let it go. And it, even though he was given a second bite of the apple, it won't be long. I guarantee it. And again, I get to see the rest of the season, but I know it won't be long until he's back to doing the same thing, and that someone's going to see it. And I think that's what I worry about, is that because of, you know, the other character we're dealing with, you know, Frank's got two kills under his belt. Doug has a kill under his belt, so to speak. You know, it's not beyond them to do something to them. And though Gavin, yes, may come in and help with the hacking and everything else like that, it's not like those Doug and them haven't proven that they can pull some crazy things and make things happen. And all it takes is just, you know, all it takes is a trip to Gitmo and Lucas is gone forever. Like, I was surprised he came back because of all this.
I absolutely. It seemed sort of strange that they just very quickly decided to use him as a witness. You know, they used a clause. I think it's there's a rule, a criminal rule, a 35, I think it is, but from that allows the attorney general to use somebody in certain cases if they have evidence on another case and they're willing to cooperate. And so they've used that loophole to get him out of jail. But they've put him in witness and protection. And, you know, I'm thinking, like, well, it's kind of nice. You know, if I was in that situation, I'd be happy with the new setup, even though he's got a crappy job at a car wash. Apartment's not so big. But it's the thing that really threw me. And I was kind of thinking, this is going to make somebody, if Lucas isn't already mad, which what everyone had been saying of him, if he wasn't already mad, the situation will make him mad, having to take on a new identity.
The thing is that all it takes is internet connection and a blog to be an anonymous person. That's all it takes. And knowing who Lucas is and what kind of, you know, writer he was and journalist and everything else like that, like, again, he is going to go down the exact same pipeline.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to be the exact same thing, which is fine. But again, it's like, man, if you would anytime you see any character, and everyone has a tragic flaw, you know, that's what makes a good villain sometimes, it makes a good character. And it's like, I could see the pathway going down. It's like, man, I know why you're coming back. I know where your line is going to go. I don't see it ending well for you. Mm-hmm. I don't know, because again, I'm intrigued, but I don't see things going terribly well for Lucas.
Yep.
Only because of who he's dealing with. If he's dealing with anybody else, it'd be a different story.
Yeah, and if he can't drive, but he doesn't have the internet. And I thought, gosh, okay, that's it. That's all I would need to go mad if I could not use the internet. But that, you know,
he'll figure out ways. Ultimately, yeah. and you know, because of his nature, he will figure out a way to do all he does. He'll go to the library. He'll do whatever. Who cares?
Oh,
he will do the research he needs to do, and he will contact the people he needs to contact, or you know, someone will contact him. Ultimately, we're going down the same pipeline that we were a while back. And I think that's the point that I don't want to go down, but I know that it, you know, it's a thing we have to, it's that weird hanging Chad. It's that dangling, you know, it's the gun that was introduced and it's like, well, it's back now. And now it's, you know, I am excited to see that bite Frank in the ass, but I don't know how yet. Before we move on to
the
next thing.
He may not be able to use the internet, but our listeners do. And...
For sure. We actually have a new sponsor this time go around. It's actually it's exciting. We rarely get new sponsors, and this one is actually the beauty part about this one. It's actually for the United States audience.
Yay.
So I'm sorry, Brits, you can't use this service yet. There are other equivalents.
Sorry, mates.
Sorry, mates, chums, old fat. But for our U.S. audience, because we are talking about the U.S. House of Cards, we have a new sponsor, 100TB.com. Seamless orchestration, automated route optimization, and a whole bunch of stuff. Basically, what 100TB.com does, they're actually... we actually consider a new sponsor. I kind of did some research on them and sort of learned about all the stuff. They do actually a lot of interesting web hosting things. They have anything for anything from virtual servers to CDNs with literally 100TB throughput, which is insane. All the way up to if you need that kind of power, bare metal servers, which basically means you have a box somewhere and it's something that you can start running a whole bunch of other things on, and very high performance stuff, completely flexible API. Everything you need, if you either need some basic, you know, virtual private server hosting, or maybe need something way more beefier, any of that. They even offer private cloud, which is, again, I every time I look at new services, I go, okay, what do they offer? Like, everything these guys offer is pretty insane.
Yeah, you were getting pretty excited before the show, pre-show.
Well, because I always like looking at new hosts and knowing certain things and having, you know, because there's about 1,020,000,000 different hosts, having one in the back pocket's always good. And again, especially for now and for the way the web works, people don't talk about this a lot. Everyone talks about space. Space really isn't important anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is to a certain degree, but ultimately the biggest thing is throughput. The idea of how fast you can deliver something, whether it be a page, whether it be a song or a video. And, you know, not only how fast you can, because ultimately everyone wants everything yesterday. And having 100TB as your throughput for a on-demand platform is insane. So go ahead and go to 100TB.com and support everyone here at the British Tech Network by signing up for some service. Their entry-level servers start at $139 a month, which is actually pretty – I mean, it sounds costly, but for that kind of support, it's insane.
Excellent. Excellent. So the part, of course, we need to talk about Frank. You can't talk about the show without talking about Frank. But there's really his reaction – his part of the show, this episode, is really just kind of – trying to get Claire back because of the damage it's doing to his campaign. And then there's a little sub-story of Dunbar, who is what I would say Breaking Bad a little. Ever since she tried to use that journal in the last season, now she's trying to find ways to play dirty with him. And she's going after the fact that Claire isn't there.
Yep.
And she's got a little inside info. Her assistant or her campaign manager, Cynthia, or is it Lisa? Cynthia. She's flirting with Seth, and Seth is telling her this information.
Yeah, it's very interesting, and I think my favorite scene with that was, of course, the pool scene where they're just sort of talking, chit-chatting about, you know, trying to offer him. It's very cool to see Frank, because I remember his, like, it's funny how we're talking about opening scenes, the beginning. I liked Frank's reintroduction to the season, sort of the showing, you know, him write the speech that he's going to eventually give at, what is it, like, I know it's a mill, it's some type of, you know.
Yeah, like, it's like a mill. It's like a, I don't know if it's steel.
Something along those lines. Some
paper
type of
mill? I'm not sure.
It's some type of blue collar establishment, which is cool. But I like how he gets to the point where he's like, now my wife, and he pauses. You know, and it's funny because they've been cutting between the future and the past, so to speak, in the shot, as he's actually giving the speech, kind of back in time on Air Force One, and it gets to that, that point where he's about to say his wife, and he crosses it out. And you see him kind of, what's great about that scene is that you see him kind of lose it at times, where he's like, how the hell do you pronounce this sort of thing? And he's like screaming and things that he, normally are cool and calm, collected Frank, is slowly losing it in this episode,
Yes.
Especially at times when because again, the audience, the campaign crowd doesn't see the demeanor change because that's Frank. He does a good job at that. But the minute he's away, like that whole veil of calm, cool, collected, like he's talking to like the press is like, so where's your wife at? Oh, she's doing something in Dallas and having fun, blah, 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 blah. Why is she with you? Oh, it's okay. We felt she would be better. Trying his best to keep everything contained. But the minute it's press, he's like, where the hell is that?
Yes.
Where, like literally sending Doug to keep her on check, which is, it's crazy to see this character throughout the episode kind of lose everything.
Yep. And he's having nightmares about her, them fighting, which I thought was kind of a weird, odd sort of place to put that. But
that was an amazing scene. That was, I love that scene because it was like, is this really happening? Because again, the beauty part about, I think this episode that's done a really well job is that it's hard to tell where reality and dream happens. And I'm like, is this really happening? Is someone going to die? Because again, we talk about all the other opening sequences, and there's been a character dying each time.
Mm. And I'm like, is this foreshadowing or what?
Is this how it ends? I'm like, if it was, like, that's the end of the show, the kind of thing. Like, this could be it.
It's like, and obviously, it's a subconscious fear he has that she's ready to stab him.
Because they are, and they're at that point. I think that. If neither of them were running for any sort of meaningful political office, I think they would kill each other. Mm-hmm. And that might be for the best. I'm just saying, it might be for the best. Yeah. But it's interesting to see again, to see this character that has been pretty cool, calm, collected. We saw a little bit of that in season 3. Like when he looked at the audience at one point, like, what are you looking at kind of moments. And it's good to see Frank losing it because, I like it a lot. I dig it a ton to see that because ultimately you see him like completely trusting in Doug, like literally getting Seth off the phone call, while they're doing a planning meeting of like, it's okay. Doug got this handled because again, he completely trusts Doug because, Doug's seen him at his best and at his worst. And sorry. It's interesting to see that dynamic happen, for sure.
Yeah, I agree. And also, he's really kind of losing his cool. Even while he's watching the television, he can't stand looking at himself saying, oh, isn't that, aren't you a cutie? When he's talking to the baby, and then he hears in the background, you're hearing them talk about Conway, that he's young, he's poised, he has a charm like JFK. And you know this is really getting at him because Conway seems to be this young family man with the charm that Frank doesn't quite have. So this will be interesting, this fight between Conway and Frank or Dunmore.
I'm curious to see how that goes because, again, Frank doesn't Frank does well under pressure visibly, but because we, the audience, kind of get a glimpse of Frank at his worst. Mm-hmm. I'm really intrigued to see kind of Frank. Again, I like seeing I've been saying this since day one. We're not following the protagonist's story. We're following the antagonist. We're following the villain. Mm-hmm. And I like to see a villain, so to speak, just completely and utterly lose it. And they have to have, I'm waiting for that moment in the season, and hopefully it happens in the season, where that line blurs too much and because he can't control it anymore, that it gets put on like, the moment during a debate or something like that, where where this, you know, whole, you know, demeanor just falls apart and crumbles, and you see the man that truly is Frank Underwood. I'm looking forward to that moment of him just screaming at like some event or press conference and just utterly losing it.
Mm-hmm.
That may be me putting that in there for the episode, because again, we're starting to see that, you know, even more so in the series, where, you know, even the point is like, because everyone in the campaign knows, and even people who are outside the campaign now know, but it'll be very interesting to see that, because I'm starting to dig that. We should probably talk a little bit more about with Claire and her actually running for office.
Sure, yeah, that ties into Frank, absolutely.
Right.
Stamper is sent on the case to stop, to just put a wrench in her plans to run.
Well, because there's a scene, you know, I know we didn't really touch on what we're talking about, Doug, but there's a really interesting scene of because, again, Stamper's always been the character that gets things done.
Mm-hmm.
And I really dug that one. There's a scene, because who's her campaign person?
Leanne Harvey.
Leanne Harvey. Where, you know, Leanne, and again, you know, Leanne's a Southern woman, and you know, typically in Southern culture, is it Texas that they're running?
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense. That's why she had a literally concealed weapon.
Right. Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Because it was a cool scene of just like of like Doug, you know, has, you know, took the gun out of her thing. It's like, give me the phone.
I wonder what our UK listeners and viewers think of that, because you know, that seems so American.
It is, but it makes sense. Again, it was a cool. I like that scene, because what I liked about the scene was it was like, because it was like, okay, you're having your fun. And again, I love seeing Doug intimidate people, because Doug's really good at doing that.
Oh yeah.
And it was just cool. It's like, oh, this little snub nose, you know, like, look at the gun, this, like, little tiny, you know, essentially a pea shooter in terms of gun sense, put it down, just like, give me your phone, you know, like, literally, like, took ownership of it, just like, you know, don't do that again, because it was such a funny scene to see all that happen, because you're like, I thought the president was down with this. Not at all. Give me the, you know, like, it was such a cool moment of seeing that, because she got scared and pulls the gun out, and you know, she walks away, calls whatever, he has the gun in hand, like, and again, keeping in mind, you know, and the audience knows this, but no one else does, again, Doug's got a kill under his belt.
Yeah, that's right.
Do it again.
Don't mess with him. And it's kind of funny that it worked. Frank and Stamper's intimidation act, she didn't show up the next day when she was supposed to be at that meeting with Doris Jones, the congresswoman.
Well, that's because she's not stupid. Like, I mean, she's now there because the president's on board, everything's good. But she ultimately is not stupid in terms of, like, I honestly don't see Claire winning, like, anything. I don't see Claire getting office at all in that city. It sucks, but I don't see it, you know, only because it's such a, you know, politics, especially local politics, is really local and hyper-local. And Texas politics, of all things, is hyper-local.
That's a good point.
You know, you can't, you know.
That's a very good point. People vote for their local district congressperson.
Well,
because
it's not even they vote for the
local district. Because they want someone to be their representative on the federal level. And yet here she is. She is the federal level, the utmost, being the first lady and a very active one. So, yeah, I don't think you're right. I mean, in the real world, I don't think that a district would select a first lady at that
time. With that in mind, you know, and this is the weird one, and this is something that, again, I know we were talking about Doug and that, but, you know, all this kind of mixes together. I will be very interested to see how that pans out because of how Texas politics tends to work, you know, and it's not like, and because the show does a really good job of mirroring the real world as best as it can, sorry, it's going to be interesting to see, because I'll put it this way. Texas is not, you know, for our UK listeners who have no idea and have a certain image of Texas, and probably the image is correct, there's only so many counties within Texas that are Democratic or liberal, for that matter. The joke I make is that if you look at any election year, you see these, like, islands of blue in a sea of red. You know, you see Laredo, you see maybe San Antonio and Austin, and that's about it, and among a sea of complete red. And most of that red is these kind of smaller areas, these smaller community kind of things. Mm-hmm. And so I'll be very interested to see how the first lady of a Democratic, you know, candidate can even remotely campaign in a southern state, a southern city, in like rural Texas of all places.
Yeah.
You know, and not only that, but just the combine of you know, her being this. Like, I think that's the, I think out of this episode, that's the most interesting thing is that whole concept of, like, that storyline is going to take on. Like, I don't see her remotely win. Like I said, I'm definitely interested in that stuff. But it's very, it's, as episode goes, I don't know. I mean, like, what are your thoughts so far on where, I mean, again, you've seen, the whole season, you know. Is that you or me?
No, let me.
Oh, sorry about that.
That's okay.
I guess something happened. I guess some video went off in a weird way on my thing.
It happens.
Every tab.
So how do I feel about the?
Like, how do you feel that? Like, how do you feel about this season? Do you? I mean, especially as one who's seen it all.
I don't have it up, but I actually. I feel the same way as I think a lot of people do. I actually tweeted out last night, what do you think about the House of Cards?
Yeah, what are people saying?
And, I don't want to quote him without knowing having the quote exactly in front of me, but Ewan Rankin of the British Tech Network, he responded, and he said he liked it, and there were issues with the plot, with the story. But overall, he really liked it, and he watched it all. So sounds like he liked it, he enjoyed it. But other people, I had two other responses of people saying I really liked it. It was better than the last season. However, everyone across the board seemed to say that they had issues with the story, with the plot.
Interesting, because that might be. That might be where I'm having issues too. And again, we came off a very.
I do think that this is a kind of a good example. I'm going to say, obviously, you know, this is House of Cards. They're going to be more exciting episodes. But I will say that I think this does sort of represent the season as a whole. It almost seems like things are happening for the sake of just creating a story or. I don't know how to exactly say what I'm saying.
Because ultimately, like, and again, well, by this point in time, we should have already got word that there's going to be another season. And you know more than I do that it probably ended on a, like, this isn't the last season.
No, it is not.
You know, mentioned the showrunner's leaving. We're having a new showrunner come in. So, you know, there's going to be another season. So because I know that that's the case, it almost feels like they're trying, at least from episode one, that they're trying to set things in motion to get to a point where they can have another season,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to have it collapse. And sometimes, you know, again, as series go on, sometimes that's sometimes for the best, sometimes for the worst. And again, I'm digging certain things. I'm just not, you know, so far digging that. But it sounds like a lot of people who've seen the whole season like it overall, which is good. That makes me excited because I had a lot of issues in season three. But you're absolutely right. It feels like certain things are happening for the sake of happening.
Yeah. And, you know, and our friends, I will say our friends, Tom Merritt and Brian Brushwood, both sort of said the same thing, that they thought this was a better episode than the last season. Or maybe even season two. I believe that was Brian. He compared this to season one, but not as good as season one.
Well, that's good. Well, Jackie, we have hit the time limit.
Yes, we have.
We are out of time. We have analyzed episode one of House of Cards season four. It begins. At least, you know what? That's the best thing I can say. It begins. And I'm actually, to be honest, out of all the things of this show I'm looking forward to is just chatting with you on this whole thing.
Oh, thank you very much. And if you want to give us your feedback, you can always hit us up on Twitter. But we, you know, email, you know, might as well email me directly. Roberto's doing 50 million other things. I'll get the email along to him. But my email is JackieHearnVoice@gmail.com. I'd love to know what you think about it. But Roberto, where can people find you?
Oh, I'm easy to find. I'm at Vincent404 there on the Twitter. So if you want to see me do other BS things on podcasting and such, head over to cosmicradio.tv. But seriously, though, email Jackie because I'm actually curious what you guys are thinking on the show. I'm Jackie and I blather on about this all the time, but I'm really curious what the audience is thinking, kind of what they, you know, everyone will notice something that I'll never notice and vice versa. So I really want to get your input on something like, oh, crap, we missed that. And I'd like to really hear those thoughts as well.
Yeah, and even though we're going technically week by week, we may not. I think that there are a lot of episodes that we can tie in together. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna pack them in, but we will be going every week until from this point forward until we're done. So stick with us, and we'll always have a live chat at one way or another if we're on the BTN network live streaming site, or some way we're going to find a way to do it. But you can always find our episodes recorded on the BritishTechNetwork.com website.
Awesome.
All right. Until next time. Good day, mate.
Is that what we're going to go with again?
At least,
at least, let's take care, audience.
All right. Bye-bye.